and one of our favorite guests, Julian Knopp. Today we're going to be talking about Legacy on Magic Online, and then do a little bit of a preview for the upcoming Bazaar of Moxen tournament. We're also going to be doing a deck construction of what we feel is one of the best decks going into that tournament, so stick around.
Yeah, so we had been having some discussion between some of the cast, and Julian wants to bring up some points about Magic Online. Julian?
Yeah, this month actually is quite interesting in what we see on Magic Online going on, because if you've been watching a lot of streams, you might notice that some notable streamers actually use different account names this month. And there's always a lot of talk about, hey, do you do this to kind of conceal your real identity or whatever? And the real reasoning is actually that on Magic Online, the more you play and the more you win, the more, it's called QPs, qualifier points you earn. So if you win an 8-man, you get 2 QPs. If you win a daily event, I think you get, I'm not sure, slightly more. And at the end of the month, if you've got 15 QPs, you will usually get a promo. And most of the time, the promo is like an okay card, it's a good card, and it's usually worth between $10 and $20. But this month, the promo for the season is actually Force of Will. And as everybody who ever tried to get into Magic Online might know, Force of Will is pretty expensive in Modo. So right now we're looking at $400 for a playset, maybe even more. And that makes it actually profitable to just open a new account for $10 and grind your way to 15 QPs again, and thus get a second Force of Will, maybe even a third if you got the time. So that's a quite interesting trend I noticed this month on Magic Online.
And it's especially worth it if you're someone like Mark, who plays like 6 hours of Magic Online a day.
Yeah, you mean Bara on Twitch?
Yeah.
And he's been doing it, and Jan, I think nobody really needs to know his nickname, Jan van der Vick, is doing it as well, and I've been doing it, and yeah, if you grind like 6 hours a day, you can even make a third account, probably, if you start focusing on it early on. You might have to double queue at some point if you don't play like each day, every day. And I did that and it worked out okay, but once I started playing the third match simultaneously, things kind of went downhill because I actually timed out and that wasn't really cool. But yeah, I mean, as I said, it's like for an 8-man tournament, if you win it, that's 3 rounds and you get 2 QPs. So if you do that 7 times, you almost get a Force of Will and you can play whenever you want. So yeah. The real interesting thing about this is what's going to happen to the price of Force of Will afterwards. And I'm all for cheaper Force of Wills on Magic Online so people can play more and we've got a bigger meta game. But because right now when you play Magic Online, you know like 50% of the guys you already know. That's cool, but I'd really love to see like Legacy on Magic Online expand. And yeah, so if the price declines significantly, we might see more people playing Legacy. At least I hope so.
Yeah, I'd be really interested in playing Legacy on Modo because I don't get to play Magic as often as I'd like, but I'm just not putting down $1,000+ for almost every single deck costs that much, and it's just not doing it again in addition to my real cards. And it's interesting that they picked such an expensive card, Force of Will, because last month it was Lion's Eye Diamond, which is also about $100 online.
Yeah, that's true. So
maybe they're trying to bring the price down, right?
Well, you say that, but then this month's promo is something just god-awful.
I think it's Bayou, isn't it?
I think you're right. I think it is Bayou.
I mean, that's okay. At least it's a dual land. I mean, in the past we had like really shitty cards, but if they keep doing this, maybe Legacy becomes more affordable in the future.
And it's also possible, especially with a card like Force of Will, that they're doing this to hype up in preparation for Vintage Masters, which comes out in another month or so.
Oh yeah, I'm so looking forward to this.
Yeah, I just don't understand why the cards are so expensive. I mean, I understand the system that they're using, it's too bad, because I know I definitely would play more Magic Online if the cards were, say, a lot cheaper.
Well, and it's kind of funny, because there's 4 or 5 cards that are very, very expensive, and you basically can't build a deck without one of those 4 or 5 cards. And it's like Force of Will, Wasteland, Rashidden Port, and there's a couple others that you have to play one of those cards in Legacy or you're playing suboptimally, and all of those are very expensive, so it makes it where Legacy buy-in on Modo tends to be in the $600 to $1,000 range.
Ugh.
Which, after you've done that in real life, is a lot harder.
You're also kind of like, you're not only paying for playing, for the fun of playing, but actually for getting like this real this opportunity to gather so much experience. I mean, for me, I would say I play like 80% of all matches I ever played Magic, I played on Magic Online. And it's, I don't know, ever since I started, I don't want to sound like an advertisement machine for Magic Online, because I think Magic Online is so incredibly flawed as a software, but the kind of experience you draw from it, I can actually never see myself ever playing a format seriously without playing on Magic Online. Even for Magic, for Modern, for example. I played Modern, and I didn't have a deck on Magic Online, and I had no idea what I was doing. It was like, yeah, let's play this card, let's play that card. Oh, my opponent's got interesting cards I've never seen before. But ever since I built Mleeropot on Magic Online, I actually feel confident in a way I never felt before, because now I actually get in so many matches, and yeah, it's kind of, I don't want to say an addiction in the way playing is an addiction, but in a way of having this resource available for preparation that I hadn't had before and that I don't want to miss again. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really fantastic tool in that way, because you're not bound to, you know, your local game store schedule. Like, my local game store plays Modern twice a week. I can only make it once, and it coincides with Legacy, which is kind of code for I'm never going to play Modern at my local game store. But if I have a Modo account, I can jump on and play 24 hours a day, which is, that's the big advantage, I think, is that you can play whenever you want against a lot of different people.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's why so many people want to play it, and that kind of also contributes to the huge prices we see, especially in the Eternal formats. Because for formats like Legacy, if you don't live like in an Eternal hub in your country, you might not actually find a lot of tournaments. So I know a lot of people that actually only play Legacy and Magic Online because they can't really play in real life, and that's a shame.
Yep. I know there's also a fair number of people who prefer Legacy on Modo because it's so much easier to borrow cards, because you don't have to be physically present. You can just, like, send out a tweet, hey, I want to play with these on the daily today. Would anyone mind lending them to me? And someone will be like, yeah, here you go. Which is, as opposed to real life, where it's like, hey, I need Force of Wills. And it's just, so anyone in this room have them?
Yeah, but of course you gotta, like, build your name or something to be credible.
You gotta be someone. But at the very least, you don't have to, again, have that restriction where it's somebody in the same room as you has to have them.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because right today I sent a friend of mine out to another friend to borrow, like, I don't know, several thousand euros worth of cards for the Bazaar of Moxen, because I don't have a Vintage deck. And I didn't even have to leave the room to get that done.
You just sent someone out.
Actually,
oh, nice.
He contacted me and he was like, yeah, I'm gonna visit this guy and do you need cards? And I was like, yeah, for sure. Okay, I'm gonna get them. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I need a Vintage deck. Can you do it? Yeah, sure. Awesome.
Yeah, I actually had another friend of mine that wanted me to lend the cards, but his requirement was for me to wear a Sailor Moon costume during the tournament, and that was like my last resort.
That doesn't seem that great.
Ah.
So moving on, Bazaar Moxen is actually coming up next week, so I was thinking that maybe we could talk about some predictions, considering that Julian here is the, you know, winner of the past Bazaar of Moxen. So, Julian, do you have any inklings or thoughts on what the metagame is going to look like?
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people missed that there was a pretty huge tournament going on in Spain, like on Easter weekend, and the turn-up for the Legacy portion was around, I think, 210, 220, I'm not sure. And so what I felt what's going to be good in Legacy right now actually turned up to be almost exactly the top 8 as we saw. So for me right now, it's actually been hardly ever been clearer that the deck you want to be playing, or at least the deck to beat right now, is Miracles. So for me it's Miracles, and then a strong second place Team America with either Tombstalker or Junior Nemesis. Right now I'm leaning towards Tombstalker, but that's not for sure. And in third place, most combo variants, like probably some kind of Sneak and Show, and maybe even Reanimator, because it's got this combo-esque touch, but also pretty good against combo. So in the Arcanist 20K that took place in Spain, we saw two Miracles decks in the top 8, two Team America decks in the top 8, two Sneak and Show / Omni Show variants, one Reanimator, and one Dredge deck. Okay, I don't know. It somehow made it into the top 8, and I mean, Dredge can always do stuff if people are not hating it and it's getting the right matchups, but okay, that's just a side note. So for the myself, Moxen, I heavily expect Miracles to show up in full force and Team America to combat it. And of course, all your usual European Storm, Sneak Show, Combo Afficionators. And yeah, that's what I'm expecting for the myself, Moxen, and also what kind of gives me headaches, because as you know, Miracles is like the worst matchup for Elves ever to see the meta game.
Yeah, that's exactly what my guess would have been, is that especially with the increased prevalence of combo, that Miracles just becomes better. And with how much Miracles we're already starting to see, how it's starting to become more and more popular, I'll be really interested to see if perhaps there's some more metagamed Miracles, like Miracles decks specifically designed also to beat Miracles, whether that be like the cheater list with the Red Blast main, or maybe one of the list that has a Stoneforge Mystics in it, or even Thopters, just as an additional way to try and win against an opposing Miracles deck.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, if there's going to be a real saturation of Miracles, the cheater build is going to be quite good. However, I think there are other ways to build a really good Miracles deck where you can still have a really good game one against everybody else, and against Miracles Mirror, you just bring in more stuff from the board. Example, I mean, I would actually cut Cleek from the main right now and probably just shove him in the board. Keep two or three in the board, bring him in the mirror, and I think it would be not too bad.
You don't like clicking the Miracle out of their hand?
No, I like doing it game two. Game one, it's... I actually prefer more Snapcaster Mages.
Right, yeah, if you play Pyroblast or Red Blast, you definitely want Snapcaster Mages, because, I mean, what's better than flashbacking a one mana hard counter or even a destruction spell for their chase? I mean, that comes naturally, that you really want to have at least two or three Snapcasters if you're going for the cheater build.
Yeah, and personally for me, I actually like three Entreat the Angels. I know people are running two and one split, but I like three in the main. That card's pretty good. It wins you games all the time, so I've been enjoying my build with three, and it's been good.
And when you go to three, you can also afford to do kind of like the chip shot, where you Entreat for one or two rather than having to win the game on the back of an Entreat for like five or six.
Exactly.
Yeah, the value Entreat is pretty good if you manage to just delay the game for a certain amount of time and you're in a grindy matchup and you don't want to risk to lose your top or whatever. You just go for like two or three Angels and it's probably going to be good enough. Especially against the decks that just one for one, they can't really race the Angels.
Or they have to like three for one themselves to like try and stay online. That seems pretty bad for them.
Oh, yeah.
So, what about Jund? We were talking a little bit earlier before the cast about Jund, Julian.
Yeah, to me, it actually seems like Jund, even though I despise the deck, might not be the worst choice for the GP. Because from what I understand and from my limited experience with Miracles, Jund is actually one of the better decks against them, especially because of the Punishing Fire engine, and also because it's kind of grindy and it's doesn't care all too much about counterbalance, and if you tune it correctly, it stands a chance against combo. I mean, it's not going to be favored against it, but it would be okay. And against most of the other fair decks, Jund itself is kind of an unfair deck, because it's probably one of the most unfair fair decks. And yeah, so, I mean, if you want to play Jund, you got to be like the Jund guy. Nobody really wakes up and is like, I feel Jund is going to be good. I'm going to be playing Jund. I think that doesn't work in Legacy. But at least for the people I know. There are like these certain dedicated Jund guys that will always play Jund. So if you're one of those guys and you like the deck, I think you should give it a shot in Annecy.
Yeah, sounds good. I got annihilated by Jund in the last tournament I played at.
What were you on, Miracles?
I was playing... I don't even remember. Oh, I played Rug Delver because I didn't want to think all day. Not to say that Rug is not a deck that requires thinking, but it is not as exhausting to play nine rounds of as Miracles is.
Yeah, it's usually, at least for the past years, it's been considered one of the most challenging and skill-rewarding decks in Legacy. But it's also a deck that you can just play right ahead. If you don't want to focus on every decision, sometimes you can still just win out on the back of mana denial and quick threats. And that's like a proactive deck. A proactive deck can always win.
Yep, and it was just kind of... I this was for the power series that I've been talking about. I woke up and I'm like, man, you know, I'm just really not feeling like 9 hours of solid magic going to time like 6 rounds in a row. So I just threw together Rug real quick and scrubbed it right up and left early.
Yeah. So how many submerges do you play in the board?
How many what?
Submerge.
I was playing 2.
Okay.
I like because 3, but I was only playing 2.
So what's your edge then against True Nemesis? Because I've heard that a lot of the Rug Delver decks are just having a lot of trouble with True Nemesis.
It's not a huge problem for me, just because where I've been playing, we see a lot more Miracles players, and a lot more, you're more concerned about things like Stoneforge Mystics than you are True Nemesis. Nemesis?
Nemesis?
Yeah. I don't think I've had a True Name resolved against me as Delver before. So, I don't know. I'm sure there is a good... I'm sure that I'm doing something wrong, but I haven't seen it yet, so it hasn't been a problem.
Okay.
Usually the answer from Rug Delver is, like, additional Pyroblasts from the board, because you can't really combat it once it hits the battlefield, so... Yeah. I know some of the European guys that are playing a lot of Rug Delver have actually turned towards the what we call Burg Delver. That's like the black, blue, red, green Delver, 4-color Delver. And that gives you access to Golgari Charm if you really, really need it. So you can kind of get rid of the True Nemesis.
And are they playing Deathrite as well?
Yeah. They usually cut Goyf.
I think the big advantage of having the death rites there is that you have that kind of long-term staying power, because you can just ping them for 2 every turn. You don't have to worry about having a blocker or anything. And I think that's the reason that deck's really, really nice. And it's also, it tends to be, well, you can use your removal on this Delver that's going to do you 3 a turn, or you can use it on this death rite that's going to do you 2 a turn, or maybe make mana, or cause a whole lot of other problems for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of the most greediest decks in all of Legacy. If you look at it and you just take a look at the basic lands they're playing, like Tiger, Underground Sea, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's the greediest mana base out there, which we have talked a lot about being really bad. But, you know, if you get down 2 death rites on the first 2 turns, you have a zillion mana for the rest of the game. And as long as you don't get wasted out immediately, you're probably okay.
Yeah, that might be true. I mean, in the long run, especially for big tournaments, greed wins tournaments. And I really feel like if you're playing a greedy deck and you want to win the tournament, of course it takes some variance to go into your way, like to go for you. But if you're playing a non-greedy, a very conservative deck, the variance swings aren't going to be as huge, but that means they're also not going to be as good for you as they could be. And if you want to really win a big, long tournament, you need variance to go for you, but yeah.
Certainly. It's maybe not better to be lucky than good, but it certainly helps.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why I keep saying Miracles is an awesome deck for day 2-ing or finishing in the cash. But for eventually winning the entire tournament, I mean, it's still good, but other decks might have a better shot. Just talking about percentages and variance that you want to make use of. I mean, the best kind of variance you get in Miracles is like blind flipping counterbalance, and that's good. But other decks that are able to curve out and use mana denial at the exact best spots and draw their stuff whenever they need it, that's a different kind of variance.
Well, I think most of the... I would say a large percentage of Miracles games that I lose is where I get mana denied heavily, or where I just, like, I never get past 2 or 3 mana because it is such a, it requires so much mana, and that's probably the number one way I lose. So, yeah, that's definitely the best way to punish it.
So I guess I gotta add some wastelands to my elf stack then. I actually considered that, like, adding, I mean, I never really tried it, but the idea of adding wastelands to elves, it's been present, and what it kind of translated into was that I wanted to make use of the huge tempo advantage you get in elves of all your different exploration guys, and of course Gaia's Cradle. And so for now, I actually added an Umestava's Chitte to the sideboard, because Gaia's Cradle, Plague Chitte, equip right away on the third turn, that's really potent. That's incredibly good. And in a deck that runs like 32 creatures in the main deck, I just want to give it a try, and I've been doing it on Modo for a week now, and it's been really, really good for me. So, just on a side note.
Yeah, that seems fine, and it makes your alternative plan of just beating down with 1/1s much, much stronger.
Yeah, for sure. I played against, what was it, like some kind of 4-color Delver, but yeah, kind of like Deathblade. And he had Umezawa's Chitte on Delver of Secrets, and he actually swung for like 5 times and got 2 counters on Chitte each time. And I kept racing against that with my own Chitte, and because everybody kept the counters on his Chitte, we were never able to kill the other creature. In the end, I actually won because I was kind of able to deny his Delver, and that was funny. I posted it on Twitch, I believe, or on Twitter, about being hit by a Delver with a Chitte 5 times and still winning the game. And people were like, come on, pictures, or it didn't happen. And sadly, I didn't have any pictures, but yeah, you gotta trust my word on this.
What about Galactig?
Yeah, what about Galactig? I don't get all the fuss about the card.
Well, I mean, he's better than nothing against Terminus.
Oh.
is putting in Galactig worth pulling out Green Sun Zenith and Natural Order? I think you'd end up having to side out so many cards that Galactig wouldn't be worth it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, also, the main reason I'm not running Galactig is people want it against Storm Combo, but it's actually not very... I don't know if I even talked about that last week, but it's not very good against Storm Combo. They still get to do whatever they want, unlike when you got like either one Cannonist, and in the end they just kill or bounce it because you got no way of protecting it, and it also blanks your Natural Order and your Zenith. And when your plan is Natural Order into Rykthar, turn to Gardog is not going to help you.
That's true.
Yeah. And against Miracles, I mean, it's okay, but they still got Karakas and Swords of Plowshares, so, I mean, the card can be answered, isn't a reason not to run it. But, I mean, you're also already making a commitment. You're committing to a second color, you've got a card in your board that you actually don't want against the matchup you wanted most, which is Storm. And against Miracles, I feel there are better tools, especially Nilrod and Pithing Needle.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me, because a turn one Needle naming top is pretty killer against a Miracles deck.
I mean, that's what I'm running in the board right now, is 3 Needle. Card's good.
Which deck are you playing right now?
I'm still playing Junk.
Ah, I guess so. You're the kind of guy I clearly associate with Junk.
Thanks.
No, I that wasn't meant as an insult, if it came across like that way. Because I've seen you post on I think The Rock and Chant threats on MTG Thesaurus for years, and that's the deck I don't know, that's what you're playing in my mind.
This is true. I'm basically always playing that deck. It doesn't matter if it's excellent or just okay.
Well, I'm excited because I just got some Noble Hierarchs in the mail yesterday, so that means that starting next week I can try out this Noble Fish deck.
From who? Who did you get those from?
Some loser in Canada.
Oh.
So are you playing Mark's list, Barra's list?
I'm probably just going to straight up play his list before I start worrying about making changes to it, because most of the changes in the thread so far are fairly minor, so I figure I'll try out the original list and change it from there. That way I can just get used to the way it plays before I start worrying about changing it.
I'm wondering about the Looter Ilkor, which could be Invisible Stalker.
Yeah, I think Mark has been pretty clear about it, that he definitely wants the looter also because of the card draw. And it's less about the shadow, the unblock ability. Because the shadow on Looter Ilkor is only especially good because it's also got a useful ability when it connects. And the Invisible Stalker, I mean, the opponent of course can't target and remove it. So with Twitter it's obviously super good, but in a vacuum, the Looter Ilkor seems better. And I'm going to trust Mark on that for a while, and at least until I have tried it myself.
Yeah, I've heard him say that one of the big advantages is that, especially once you have Edric out, you're going through so many cards that you just can't possibly not have the stuff that you want. Because you'll draw one off that, you'll draw one off Edric, and then you're brainstorming or pondering or whatever every turn. And it's just like, you see so many cards that if you don't have it, then they just have the god hand.
Ah, wow. Okay, well, I mean, I'll look to see kind of his choices, and I don't know, I think the deck is fine. I think it still needs work. It's still definitely in the tuning stages.
Yes, certainly, certainly.
And the best card, of course, Judge's Familiar.
That card never countered
insane.
A spell ever.
Yeah, but that's what it does. If it prevents you from ever casting the spell in the first place, while beating you down and drawing cards of Edric, well, that's great.
It also won, what, 2 Pro Tours? 3?
I think it won Pro Tour Dublin, but I don't know about the others.
So a couple of viewers had actually asked us to renew kind of the deck deconstruction section that we had done earlier on in the podcast, maybe about 6 months ago, where we talk about a deck and kind of what it's trying to do, what the pieces are, why cards are in a certain deck, and then how to beat that deck. And we've done Deathblade before when Deathblade was all the rage, but now it seems like Miracles and Team America are kind of all the rage. So is there a particular one that we'd like to do today?
I think Team America is probably easier for right now because it tends to play more four ofs, whereas Miracles tends to look a little bit like a vintage deck list.
That's fair.
So Team America tends to be four Delver, four Goyf, four Deathrite Shaman, some number of Liliana, some number of Abrupt Decay, probably four. And from there, it's mana base and four or five more cards I'm missing. Oh, and then your choice of Tombstalker or True Name Nemesis or some mixture of both. I'm a big fan of Tombstalker. The only problem is in your deck, if you're playing this deck, Tombstalker does shrink your Goyf and make your Deathrite Shaman less aggressive. But it's also a 5/5 for as little as two, so...
I mean, let's go over the kind of, like, the creature base and why, and then we'll move on to the spells. So, I mean, Delver of Secrets seems pretty obvious. 3/2 flyer. I mean, Delver's been around for a while. I mean, this is nothing new. Deathrite Shaman. I mean, we talked about last week about having, when you're playing this deck, whether or not you want to lead with Deathrite Shaman or Delver of Secrets. However, I would say most of the time, you want to be as aggressive as possible and just go with Delver. Is that pretty... Are we pretty agreed on that?
Yeah, well, and this is an example of how this deck is kind of... there's not exactly a lot of synergy. It's just kind of a three-color good stuff deck because you could play the Deathrite Shaman to have that synergy of being able to ramp quickly, or you could just beat their face in as quickly as possible. And I think you really just want to beat their face in as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's your usual tempo approach to Legacy. I mean, all the cards kind of... This is this tempo block you got of Delver, Daze, Wasteland, sometimes Spellpierce. And if you want to make best use of it, of course, in a vacuum, I'm pretty sure you start with Delver. But of course, it changes if you know the matchup, if you're in game two, so sideboard cards are also a consideration and your knowledge of the matchup. But in a vacuum, I'm pretty sure Delver of Secrets will always be the best play on turn one.
And, I mean, we're still playing Tarmogoyf as well, because, you know, having a 5/6 or 2 is still pretty good. And game 1, most people aren't playing Rest in Peace main, so you still have to be able to deal with it. Now, it seems like the 2-creature slot is what's changing up a lot in a lot of different lists. So some people are running Dark Confidant, some people are crazy and running a 1/1 split of something, some people are running Tombstalker and Trinity Nemesis. I think if you plan on running against non-Swords to Plowshares deck, I gotta agree that Tombstalker is pretty darn awesome. However, if you were running this deck with a whole bunch of Miracles, I gotta feel like either Dark Confidant or Trinity Nemesis is probably a little bit better. Thoughts?
Yeah, that makes sense, and I think that's as much a metagame decision. That's a decision on what style of play you prefer, whether you prefer to sit back a little bit and wait to draw what you need, or if you just want to bash face in, like I said earlier. And I think that personal style does matter a lot in a deck choice like this, because you're going to play the deck that you like better.
Yeah, the one of the choices really you have to make is whether you play Dark Confidant or not, and you can't really combine Tombstalker and Dark Confidant, because it's gonna come back to bite you at some point, and you will hate life for that. And with Miracles on the Rise, even though I clearly prefer Tombstalker in general, I feel you might wanna go for the Dark Confidant, because that's one more of the must-answer creatures. You usually have to answer Delver at a certain point, but Dark Confidant really needs to be answered or it would quickly take away the game. So if you want to go and play Buck Delver or Team America, I think Deathrite Shamans are a given and Dark Confidence as well. So maybe you don't want to play Tombstalker right now. Of course, in the mirror, it's one of the very best cards. So if you expect a lot of the mirrors, you might want to play them. I'm pretty undecided on that. So you see, both are kind of viable. And it depends on what you like and what you really expect to be playing against and what you want to be good against.
I agree. I think there's a lot of room for play.
Well, and depending on your the metagame at your local store or wherever it is that you're playing, one reason you might not see the mirror as frequently as you might expect is the land base in a bug deck is, I think that's the most expensive land base in Legacy.
I would say so.
So I think that is probably a factor that contributes to bug not being more popular, simply because you've got $2,000 in dual lands alone.
That's a fair point. Never thought about that. I mean, if you look at Miracles, yeah, you got the Tundras, and most people are not even running a full playset of them. And yeah, the fetch lands that you probably have right away. So yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so I mean, I agree that this deck is pretty good. I agree that you have to make some concessions against the Miracle Mirror, because I know a lot of people are like, some people claim that the Miracles Bug Delver matchup is 60-40 in their favor, because they've played a bunch of matchups, and they think it's really good for them. However, I think you actually, as the Bug Delver player, have to be playing Liliana or Sylvan Library or both main deck. So I think Miracles is going to be prevalent enough, and there are good enough players out there, and the deck itself is good enough that you have to be a little bit pre-boarded for it.
That's fair enough. Here's a question for you. Since we've had the discussion counters versus discard, do you prefer having the discard heavy where you're playing Thoughtseize and, say, Hymn to Turok, or do you prefer the more counter heavy where you've got, you know, a full set of Force of Will and two or three Spell Pierce and maybe a full set of Days? Which do you prefer?
Me personally, I prefer in this deck, I prefer the counter spells, especially if you know you're going to be fighting against, say, Miracles, because I want to be able to counter, say, Jace, Entreat the Angels, whatever, and I know my Thoughtseizes might be able to grab top. Sure, maybe on turn one, hooray, but after that, they're going to be pretty bad.
Yeah, for me, I clearly like Thoughtseize, but I don't like him to charge. I hate the tempo loss you get from it. If you play Thoughtseize on turn two and you don't hit the right cards, you're not behind card-wise, but tempo-wise. And in a deck like Bug Delver, I don't want that. So for me, Thoughtseize are great, so you might want to run maybe two in the main deck, but I want my full set of Force of Wills. I might even want Days in a full set, and probably like two copies of Spell Pierce with more Flusterstorms from the sideboard, and at least one or two Vendilion Clicks. If not in the main, then at least in the sideboard, because thinking about combo decks, and especially in Legacy and all the Storm decks, I've seen quite a lot of Senseless Divining Top lately. I'd much rather be able to counter what they actually want to play instead of preemptively discarding stuff they might just redraw later on.
Sure, and that's one thing that is a strong advantage to playing black right now, is you're talking about they might redraw it later, is that with black, you can just actually cast Surgical Extraction, which is just such an amazing card, and we've seen in the last month or two, there have been some really funny plays of Surgical Extraction on camera at Star City Games, just like, I believe it was in LA, that was it Kobe who surgically extracted a polluted Delta? That's just,
yep.
Besides being a hilarious play, it ended up probably winning that game because the guy didn't have any mana and had a much worse time, and that's another really big advantage you get with playing Bug or any black deck, which has been not as popular in the last month or so.
Yeah, and I think Sylvan Library and Liliana are really good. Also, too, there's a lot of discussion, there's a lot of disagreement between whether or not you board out Abrupt Decay versus Miracles or not. Because there's a school of Miracles thought that says, okay, we're going to bring out our counterbalances or bring out our Rest in Pieces, and that is what Philip has kind of talked to us about. However, I don't think you can actually take that chance as a Bug Delver player and take out your Abrupt Decays, because if they leave them in, you're just screwed. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's kind of a mind game. Yeah, go ahead.
I think if they take out Counterbalance and they choose not to have Rest in Peace in, like, you're already on the advantage. Do you really mind having four not as good cards? And if they leave them in, then you definitely want to have your Abrupt Decays. So I think, at best, you have a huge advantage and four dead cards. At worst, they leave them in and you took your Decays out, and now you're really, really screwed.
Yeah, I know that Philip actually, he's been quite active on the Team America thread on the source, and he recommends siding out your Abrupt Decays and the Wastelands to make room for the stuff you want to bring in. And I will give Philip a lot of credit for what he says, and he probably knows way better than I do, but I was kind of surprised to hear taking out the Wastelands to make room for your spells you want to bring in from the sideboard.
I agree you should take out one to two Wastelands, because you actually don't need them as much. But all four? That seems bad.
All four sounds like you start running into a problem with being able to generate mana, just because taking four lands is a lot of land to remove, especially in a deck that uses Deathrite Shaman for mana.
Yeah, and your Deathrite Shamans might not even live through, like, two or three turns against Miracles anyways.
Yeah, so moving on to the sideboard of this deck, most decks are running some combination of, like, Golgari Charm, Disfigure, Sylvan Library, Pithing Needle, Grafdigger's Cage, Spell Pierce, Vendilion Click, Crows and Grip, Liliana. I think if you're planning to run against Bug Delver, you need to expect kind of all of these cards are possible. However, the sideboards are varying really widely. However, mine, which I'm testing against, kind of as a gauntlet deck, would be two Golgari Charm, two Disfigure, for all of these swarm decks and just like Stoneforge Mystic based decks and stuff. Winter Orb, I'm running as a one of, because A, I own a really nice copy, and B, because it's really good against Miracles and the Punishing Fire decks. Null Rod against Equipment and Sensitive Divining Top. One Pithing Needle against Equipment, Jace, Top, whatever. One Sylvan Library against all the other mid-range matchups and control matchups. Cage against Elves and against all the graveyard based decks. Two Spell Pierce. I've actually really been liking the Spell Pierce against combo as well as against Miracles, because you can bring out your Dazes and bring in Spell Pierces, and then, you know, they don't expect them. One Crows and Grip for Equipment and Miracles, one Vendilion Clique for Equipment and Miracles and combo, and Liliana against whatever you want to bring Liliana against, Trinity Nemesis, etc.
Disfigure is a really funny card in this deck because, well, Jeff Chen, who top-8ed Star City Games, Dallas, put it really well, and he said, you know, I'm always happy when I cast Disfigure, but I'm so unhappy that a card that's as bad as Disfigure needs to be in my deck.
So true.
Disfigure, it's like my bane. It's a card you always know they will probably bring in, and you just mentioned it. The power level of Disfigure isn't really that high, but it always gets you in some way because it's so cheap, and I just hate it. And if you are playing Bug Delver, I'm pretty sure you should at least play two copies of Disfigure because it's really, really good. Even just disfiguring a Stoneforge Mythic when he just got Better Skull, yeah, great. Good value, kind of.
I mean,
tempo-wise.
Some people are playing a main, it's so good.
Yeah, I can see one copy in the main. That might be okay.
So do we feel we've kind of discussed this enough to...
I think one other point is Golgari Charm is when you're talking about siding out your... Abrupt Decays, your sideboard doesn't have that many options to take your Abrupt Decays out. And one example of that is like Golgari Charm, you might want to bring in against a Miracles deck for the enchantment kill. And if you don't and you take out your Abrupt Decays, you're cutting yourself down even that much further because you have other cards in your sideboard for dealing with enchantments. So I just think your options are so much worse if you take your Decays out.
So all in all, how do you beat this deck?
Graveyard Hate is an excellent place to start, which we've talked about numerous times, that like a card like Rest in Peace makes their Turmoil Waves 0/1s, and it makes their Deathrite Shamans 1/2s that cost a lot of money. Now, like as we've discussed, Decay can get rid of that, but you're still all right at that point, I think, because if you've gotten a Rest in Peace and you've cleared out the graveyards and then they decay it, okay, there's an instant in the graveyard. You can activate Deathrite Shaman once, or you can have a 1/2 Goyf. And from here, I'm gonna try to continue and hate the stuff that you've done. So I think you're still fine if they've destroyed your Rest in Peace.
Yeah, for me, if you want to beat Bug Delver, like with most combo decks, I feel like you have to be aware of how the matchup plays out. Because the longer the game goes, the worse the cards become. I mean, it's not like with Canadian Threshold that's gonna be not as potent as Bug Delver in the late game, but if you manage to kind of like just take some damage and be aware of that you are taking this damage right now to have a better board position later on, I think that's the right mindset you gotta have it. You gotta have in this matchup. Of course, it depends on what you are actually playing and whether you consider yourself the control deck in this matchup. But other than that, the deck doesn't really have a lot of real cards. Like, okay, you gotta worry about Deathrite Shaman, Tarmogoyf, Delver, and Deathrite Shaman might not even be much of an issue if you got your own Deathrite Shamans, and then you only got, like, I don't know how to phrase it. To me, it's just like, okay, you just gotta get some breathing room, and then clear, kind of dominate the board, and work from there. So don't fall for the tempo plan. Don't play right into Wastelands when you don't have to. Don't fetch if you don't have to, and you're not gonna use the mana right away. Just try to ingest some damage, and then build from there. So you don't really have to abrupt decay their Tarmogoyf in the second turn. Just wait and make sure that, I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe because I usually only play elves against it, and of course elves is very specific in the way it goes about most matchups. But to anybody who's having trouble beating tempo decks, just be aware of that your deck is gonna be better than theirs the longer the game goes. So playing like, I know like years ago, having a card like Genesis on the board against Canadian Treasured was like insane, because what are they gonna do about it? Okay, kill it, then it comes back. So that's just my thinking. If you got like real solid creatures and you know how the matchup works, just don't feel bad about taking early damage and make sure you're gonna dominate the late game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, make your land drops is essentially what I was gonna say. Try to make your land drops. Don't play into days if you don't have to. And if you have a deck with a lot of removal, you're gonna be fine. I feel like if you're playing Patriot, you know, 7 to 8 pieces of removal is going to be A-okay. I'm running Junk, and I'm running 7 pieces of removal main deck and equipment, and the matchup is just fine as long as I don't, you know, wander into, like, some sort of crazy double days or something like that. They only have 4 pieces of removal, usually, main deck, for Abrupt Decay, so, I mean, if you can overload them, you know, you're going to be fine. They also have trouble, I mean, if you have a Liliana down, they have very few creatures, so, I mean, that could also be an issue that you should think about. Also, Grim Lavamancer is quite good against them, so if I were playing Patriot, I would actually think about running Grim Lavamancer main, and, wait for it, Basilisk Caller in the sideboard.
I don't know if I would go as far as Basilisk Caller, but Grim Lavamancer is definitely, I think, an underplayed card right now, because you've got, between the ability to shrink the graveyard, which is very important, that's the cost. That's supposed to be its drawback, is that it shrinks the graveyard. And at the same time, it's going to kill Deathrite Shaman and Stoneforge Mystic, and it's going to severely hurt Liliana. Like, that card is, I think that's a card that every red deck other than Rug should probably be playing a two of, just because it's got so much going for it with the decks that are being played right now.
Yeah, I agree. But I think Basilisk Caller has some merit, because, you know, sometimes you're staring down a 5/6 Tarmogoyf, and what do you do about it? Well, you shoot it with Grim Lavamancer, and you kill it. It might be too much. I'm just suggesting that card exists, and people need to look at it again.
Seems
and think
very
about it.
Magical Christmas thing to me.
It definitely is, but it feels good.
You can even try killing the Emrakul with that.
Exactly.
I like
what that. Happens if you've got turn 1 Grim Lavamancer, they've got turn 2 Show and Tell, and then you just like play and equip Basilisk Caller and kill them?
Then you high-five everybody around you and start laughing.
This is true.
Is that like when you block Emrakul with 15 squirrels? I am Emrakul, Destroyer of Planes. Oh my god, squirrels, get them off me.
You do a victory lap around the store, right?
I think you just win the match if you do that. You don't have to play the game two.
Okay.
Oh, that's cool. I like that mechanic.
Style points.
Maybe they're going to introduce that at some point. Like a card that makes you not only win the game, but the entire match. But nah.
Well, that's very similar to, they have announced some of the cards in Conspiracy will not be Eternal Legal. And the theory online right now is that they will be cards with the Conspiracy card type, where it will be some sort of alternative win condition. Like, if some examples that have been given, like, if you deal 20 damage but don't kill anyone this turn, you win the game.
If you deal like 20 damage, there must be some way to deal damage to yourself.
That's just an example of one of the, something somebody was giving as a way that it could work, but that's, what people are thinking is that there'll be alternative win condition cards. Yeah, neat idea.
Interesting.
And I'm sure we'll delve into that set more when more than like 3 cards have been spoiled from it.
Yeah, instead we're left with this awful set that's just been released, and it's bad. Day aside, so good.
I saw there was a picture from the pre-releases that said, well, I think our community has spoken. It was a picture of all the stacks of boxes when you get to choose which color you want to add to your pool. And there were like 2 white boxes left and like 15 to 35 of all of the other colors left.
Jesus. Not shabby. So I think we'll move on to our last thing that we want to talk about, is plays of the week. So, Julian, did you have any like super crazy plays online over the past like week or two?
Actually, not this week, but there's because we are talking about Miracles a lot lately. There's a very interesting play against Miracles I remember that came up during playtesting. We were playing Goblins. Yes, some people still play the deck against Miracles, and the Miracle guy, he was kind of dead on board. So on his turn, he tapped out for chase. He went for a brainstorm, then he played a land, a fetch land, and passed the turn. he also had Senseless Divining top in play. So the Goblin player, he's got lethal damage on board. So what he does is he goes ahead and declares attackers, at which point the Miracles guy flips his top. So I'm pretty sure a lot of people would be like, ah, oh, fuck, he's got Terminus. Nah, now I'm done. So what we did, and I think that's really interesting, and if you're aware of this trick, you might already know what I'm going to talk about, but if not, at least you've got something to learn. So this guy, he spun his... Is that what the way you say he spun his top? I don't know. He spinned his top. And
yep, spun.
Spun, okay, great. He spinned his top, spun...
It's okay.
You gotta cut that out. Okay, so what the Miracles guy did is he spun his top, and in response, we activated Rashade and Port and tapped his fetch land. And if you try to imagine that in your head, what's going on there, you will realize that the guy is kind of screwed now, because he's got two options. He either lets the wasteland resolve and then can't pay for the Terminus that he's obviously drawing, or he fetches, and that means the Terminus is no longer on top that he put there from the chase brainstorm, and hopes to just randomly flip Terminus, which is like very bad odds. So that's a play that was super cool. It ended up winning the match, and I think that not a lot of people are aware of that you can still kind of mess with the deck even though the top activation is on the stack. Even stuff like Surgical Extraction, I mean, maybe it's not going to be good, but at least makes them shuffle their deck.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Wasteland, the fetch plan against Miracles, just because of stuff like that, just messing with them, especially when they've got something ridiculously good. It's like, well, would you like that land, or would you like the cards that are going to beat me?
It's also when they activate the top, always be aware of that you can now abrupt decay the top. I mean, it's still going to be a 2-for-1 for them, but maybe you've got good reasons to. They will still draw the card and trigger the Miracles, but at least to get rid of the top. And for me, as an Elves player, I will be happy to 2-for-1 myself if I'm able to get rid of
the
top.
Yeah, it's when we start getting into virtual card advantage, when you say, is it really a 2-for-1 when they can't filter their deck anymore? That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Big plays this week. Opponent was on Imperial Painter, and he had double Goblin Welder, and he had a Ratchet Bomb on board, and he had his Grindstone in the graveyard, and no Painter out yet. And I was a little bit behind, and I Rip Engineered Explosives, and I get to EE on one, and he can't do anything about it, because obviously if he welds out the Ratchet Bomb, he brings in Grindstone, and all three get destroyed. Wasn't it like an insane play? It was just like, hooray, I got to almost 3-for-1 someone. In terms of tricky play, or actually I had a really big screw up. He plays turn 2 Blood Moon, and then turn 3 Megas of the Moon, and I've got Krosan Grip in hand, and I've got a Forest and Tomb Now Mountains. So I was no problem. I'm like, okay, I'm going to Krosan Grip this Blood Moon, and I'll be out of this, and I'll crack these fetch lands, and it'll be all good. Nope, turns out I forgot the fact that there was still a Megas of the Moon on board. I mean, I still won the match because then I had Swords to Plowshares for the Magus of the Moon, but whatever. I just felt so bad. I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to do this and crack these fetch lands. And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. What are you doing? Just felt like an idiot.
This reminds me of the match I played on stream against Miracles. This guy, he was playing Miracles, as I said. And the entire time I've been wondering, why is this guy not using his top? He's not filtering his draws. He's not looking before fetching. I have no idea what's going on. And after like 4 or 5 turns, somebody in the chat was like, dude, you got a pithing needle on top. Yeah. Read
You're
the cards,
so good.
Look at the cards, be aware of your cards, I guess.
No, sure, sometimes you forget you're just killing your opponent. And you're like, but why are they playing so poorly? Oh, right.
Oh yeah, that's in Modern. That happened in Modern. I had Voice of Resurgence in play, and my opponent had 4 mana, and he really did not want to play stuff on my turn. So he made this super awkward play where he casted Snapcaster Mage, held priority, and then remanded his own Snapcaster Mage. So that's like 4 mana, draw a card. And it was hilarious, just because I had Voice of Resurgence.
That is just god-awful.
So, unfortunately, I'm going to have to go, so I think maybe we should do the exit, save it.
That would be the misplay of the week, Matt, for you to leave us.
So, thanks for listening this week. I'm Matt Pavlik.
I'm Sam Craven.
I'm Julian Knapp.
Feedback is always appreciated. Email us at everydayeternalcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/everydayeternalpodcast or follow us on Twitter at eternalmtg.